The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
Over this past week, I've had many conversations with colleagues, friends, and congregants with a common theme emerging. People are grumpy. People are feeling unsteady. People have a lack of motivation. I'm included. I'm not separate from that. I've cycled through these feelings as well. But I have had moments of joy and laughter, but these are kind of the dominant feelings right now. There was an aha moment for a group of us on Thursday, and the realization that this is a familiar feeling. A familiar feeling from the pandemic time. A time when our world was in a state of chaos. There were many unknowns. Fear was prevalent. People's lives were being threatened. And what we could control of our reality was so very little. This created in our society and in ourselves a constant state of anxiety and a feeling of ungroundedness. I think it's safe to say we are in a similar time now. When we lose control of our realities, our narratives, our sense of safety, of those things we know to be true, we can become anxious and unsteady. We can feel like the very ground under us is not there. Buddhist teachings tell us suffering is the attachment to permanence. We suffer when we hold on to the illusion in our lives that nothing changes. Now, if you think this is easy just to let go of, I'll remind you that Buddhism has been around for over 2,500 years. And I'm sure if you have talked to any Buddhist who has not reached enlightenment or freedom from suffering, you will find out it is not easy to do. All this to say, this grumpy, anxious, unsteady, sad, or general sense of malaise, you are not alone. And it's understandable. Because we are in a world suffering that's in a state of chaos with many unknowns, where fear is prevalent, people's lives are being threatened, and where our control of reality is limited. We are suffering in a world that is continuously breaking that comforting illusion that it is constant and permanent. Buddhist nun Pema Chodron shares, "As I look at the world, I see that a lot of us are running around in circles, that there's pretending that there's ground when there actually isn't any ground, and that somehow, if we could learn not to be afraid of groundlessness, not to be afraid of insecurity and uncertainty, it would be calling on an inner strength that would allow us to be open and free and loving and compassionate in any situation." So how do we find the inner strength right now when we are suffering? How do we move with the suffering to respond in loving and compassionate ways, not only with each other, but with ourselves? How many of you in your childhood or with your children or with your grandchildren built a blanket fort? Or maybe been camping with a tent? Or just had a special nook that you had that was your very own, that place of comfort, right? These places with coziness that were separate but also held in the vastness of something else that provided security and safety. My sister and I were quite the blanket fort builders. We pulled, not to my parents' like happiness or anything like that, we pulled all the cushion off the couch, all the chairs from the around the dining room table, set them up, put the blankets, the sheets, the pillows, spread out all through the living room. And of course, we had to have every single one of our stuffed animals shoved into that blanket fort. It was an intimate space. We shared stories and secrets and sang songs. It was a general sense of safety and security. There's this episode of The Big Bang Theory where one of the main characters, Sheldon Cooper, builds a blanket fort with his girlfriend, Amy. What is important to know about Sheldon is that he's neurodivergent, and in order for him to function in the world, he has to find ways to control the world he lives in. He does this by having a regular schedule of his days, creating contracts with friends and his girlfriend, and having particular rules in how he engages. This is important for his sense of safety in his day-to-day life. In the episode where Sheldon and Amy build a blanket fort, they spend time sharing stories and getting to know each other. Now, in the contract that Sheldon and Amy have, it states very clearly that date night ends at 9 p.m. So as 9 p.m. comes around, Amy starts getting ready to leave and starts getting ready to take down the blanket fort. And Sheldon, because he's feeling safe, suggests maybe for this night, only this night, date night can go on a little bit longer. And so they settle back into the blanket fort and continue to share stories from their childhoods, from their lives. What allowed Sheldon to shift his rules? What allowed him to feel safe? And it was trust. It was trust in himself and in Amy. In this month where we are, our theme is the practice of trust. What kind of blanket fort can we build and create together that will allow us to have a sense, that same sense of safety and security, even in the midst of a chaotic world? According to Charles Feltman, author of The Thin Line of Trust, trust is choosing to risk making something you value vulnerable to another person's actions. I'm going to say that again. Trust is choosing to risk making something you value vulnerable to another person's actions. Brené Brown, a best-selling author, professor, and researcher of courage, empathy, and shame, developed an acronym, BRAVING, to talk about the anatomy of trust. I know not everyone connects to Brené's work, and so I ask that you trust me at this moment, to stick around and know that it's worth hearing what this acronym means. First, she picked braving because she believes that when we are doing trust, we are braving a connection with someone else. We are leaning into relationship and connecting in a vulnerable, willing way. And so we start with B, boundaries. When we have well-defined boundaries in our relationship with others, then we know what to expect from them, and they know what to expect from us. When we create small groups or classes or have meetings, we set the boundaries of how we will be together. By respecting that each person has the ability to share what they determine is important to share, and it is only their story to share, we set boundaries. We create boundaries that define how and when our physical space is used. A culture of consent in our congregation defines our boundaries of how we interact with each other's personal space. Boundaries are essential to creating trust because they set that expectation and that definition of how we can be in relationship together. Once we set our boundaries, then we can use those to build reliability. When we show up for each other on Sunday each week, we know we will have worship together, which will hold certain reliable elements throughout the service, our chalice lighting, our covenant, our doxology, music, offering all of those normal things that we do on a Sunday. When we show up for each other, send cards, make phone calls, and all the other things we do to build connection, then we are creating the foundation of reliability. And when we rely on each other, then we know we can trust each other. Accountability, a word we have grown to love in this community and realize it's not one of punishment or shame, but instead helps us build relationship by giving us a means to make amends when a mistake is made. And we know mistakes will be made because we are wonderfully imperfect humans. Accountability also helps us hold the consequences of crossing someone's boundaries or not showing up for another, as well as a way to repair the harm that has been caused. So we're B-R-A, now we're on V. Once all those are in place, then we turn to the vault or confidentiality. As ministers, Vanessa and I hold the responsibility of confidentiality very seriously. We know that if a confidence is broken, all trust is lost. This is true for several of our lay leadership teams in the church as well, the Board of Trustees, our lay chaplains, and our Healthy Congregations team. Confidentiality is always in our small group covenants and classes. Brené Brown expands this confidentiality, though, to include the idea of gossip. When we use someone else's story or pain to try to make a connection, then we're also breaking confidence and deteriorating trust. Because how am I supposed to trust you if you came into the kitchen to tell me about someone else's affair or that their child was arrested? Gossip is the enemy of trust. Our shared values, congregational covenant, resolutions create the common ground for integrity. When we have a shared understanding of how we want to create community together and everyone starts from an understanding, then we have integrity. We witnessed it earlier in our new member ceremony where we named values that we invite people to be members of the church and help co-create the church. We understand this concept as we create and support through our pledges a budget each year. We show up and live into our values, the ways we have defined our community together. And we do all this, the boundaries, the reliability, the accountability, the confidentiality or the vault, and the integrity. We do all of this, hopefully, in a non-judgmental way. We learn to lean into each other, not just through our actions of helping and supporting each other, but also through our requests for help. We truly trust others when we can ask them for help and they can ask us for help, knowing they will not be judged for needing support. By showing up to listen and share with each other our joys and sorrows, our thorns and roses in non-judgmental ways, then we can deepen the trust we have in each other. And finally, we do all of these things with a generosity of heart. We believe each of us brings the best of intentions for our community and in our interactions with each other. We are able to be generous in our understanding that if someone makes a mistake or does not show up as their best self, then we extend compassion and love to help pull them back into relationship. We don't shame them or scold them or rage at them because we are in community. We offer grace, compassion, and understanding. Now imagine, if you will, we're building our blanket fort here. Imagine each of these concepts being a blanket or a pole or a chair or a cushion in that blanket fort. We would have well-defined boundaries, knowing we could rely on each other, holding each other accountable for our actions in loving ways, keeping confidence in a vault of friendship, living into our integrity with our shared values, being non-judgmental in our approach, and doing all this with a generosity of heart. If we are able to create in our church community a blanket fort with these defining concepts holding it together, then can you imagine how that would impact our ability to set aside our grumpiness, our anxiety, our ungroundedness, if we knew we had this place we helped co-create to come and find safety? Could we help each other be a little more steady in our day? Help us find that groundedness at least once a week, especially in this chaotic world. This could possibly mean and feel like in our reading today that in the midst of the upheaval, the falling and the catching and all of that, that at some point in our lives, in our days, our feet feel standing on the ground. There's a video called Why Trust is Worth It, and I encourage you to go watch it. It was created by Z Frank, an online entertainer who teamed up with a group of acrobats from Cirque du Soleil. The video shows two of the performers, Anya and Gail, moving each other's bodies around and trusting each other to hold the other one in very precarious positions. At one point, Anya is holding Gail up, I can't even remember, I think it was this way, upside down behind her back, and he is straight up, upside down. And at one point brings him down so he is parallel to the floor. All while they're moving each other in these very precarious positions, Z Frank is sharing a reflection on trust. And I offer you this reflection. Anya and Gail have to trust each other. As acrobats in Cirque du Soleil, they sometimes literally put their lives in someone else's hands. Trust is a confusing thing. It seems so simple, but when you try to pin it down, it can be elusive. I think of the way that my body sits on a surface that's new to me, unknown, and how my muscles remain tight, anticipating anything, and I'm constantly aware of that surface. Over time, with familiarity, I can relax and start to lean back. For many of us, that initial tension exists so much of the time. We expend so much energy watching and calculating, trying to predict, reading signs and people, ready for anything to change suddenly, preparing to be disappointed. So much energy spent. We talk about trusting as something you build, as if it is a structure or a thing, but in that building, there seems to be something about letting go. And what it affords us is a luxury. It allows us to stop thinking, to stop worrying that someone won't catch us if we fall, to stop constantly scanning for inconsistencies, to stop wondering how other people act when they are not in our presence. It allows us to relax a part of our minds so that we can focus on what's in front of us. He continues, and that's why it's such a tragedy when it's broken. A betrayal can make you think of all the other betrayals that are waiting for you in things you haven't thought of, in people you rely on, and you can feel yourself tightening up, bracing in the worst cases. You might resolve to trust no one, but that doesn't really work. Trust is your relationship to the unknown, what you can't control, and you can't control everything, and it's not all or none. It's a slow and steady practice of learning about the capacity of the world, and it's worth it to keep trying. It's not easy. Anya says that trust is like a fork, not one way, but many ways, physical, emotional, and maybe something else. I almost imagine trust as these invisible hands that we stretch out into the world, looking for someone to hold on to as we walk into the unknown future. Anya and Gail began practicing together as friends, and now they are a couple. It took time. So who do you trust, and how can you grow it? Again, I invite you to watch that video. It's gorgeous to watch them move and hear those words. So can we create a community that allows us the luxury of letting go, of putting our faith in each other, of relaxing our minds on helping each other sustain the actions we need to take outside our world, outside our walls? If we can, then our rewards are laughing with each other, sharing moments of joy and wonder, the renewal of hope that we need, and maybe even building a blanket fort or two. I'll end with this poem by Julia Fehrenbacher. This is what silence said to me today. Trust what you can't see. Move forward despite the wobbly groundlessness of I don't know. Breathe, love, create, show up as you are every day, no matter what. Go to where the wild irises grow. Say thank you for all of it. Weeds, cracks, sunbeams, that hand on your shoulder, the forever throb of ache. It's all a doorway, a hand leading you back to grace. May we step into the practice of trust, braving to be vulnerable in our connections with each other, and build a blanket fort where we can find safety and security from the chaotic world beyond our walls. May it be so. Amen.
I spent my whole childhood attending a small Unitarian Universalist congregation in Delaware. That church was the center of my family's social life and also where we lived our values. After learning progressive values in Sunday school and from the general culture of the church, I even joined the LGBT activism committee when I was 13, learning all through high school how to plan events, lobby state legislators, and educate the congregation. That church was the incubator for my commitment to service that I carried forward into my adult life. So when I moved to San Francisco about a decade ago and was searching for community and opportunities for social justice work, UUSF was an obvious place to check out. I still remember one of the first events that I attended. It was a book club for the book Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson. The writer told of his founding of the Equal Justice Initiative, which has prevented over 100 people from receiving the death penalty in the US and has been involved in many Supreme Court cases challenging sentences of death and life without parole for crimes committed before turning 18. But it wasn't just a book club. Member Bob Bacon was there to speak about his own life of work fighting the death penalty and to gather signatures for a California ballot proposition that would end the death penalty in the state. I was so inspired with the ease with which I could move from learning to acting and to meet someone who had dedicated his life to critical justice work. And of course, there are so many more members here fighting for justice, too many to name in this short time. But to raise up a few, Rochelle Fortier-Wadibia has argued human rights cases in front of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and Sam King leads a progressive voter organizing nonprofit. My work is more corporate, and my responsibilities within the church lately are more internally focused, as the chair of the Committee on Ministry and a longtime worship associate. So it's very grounding to stay in contact with everyone who is doing the good work in the world as a reminder that I can always find ways to do more. And it is so rewarding to know that everything I do to support this church creates a spiritual home for people who are out doing that good work. Thank you.
Okay, we're trying to get the microphone the right way today. Can you hear us well?
Yes.
Good.
All right. Hello again. We are Harry and Miriam Yost Morin, and we are the co-chairs of the annual pledge drive this year.
And we wanted to really say thank you for all the wonderful kind words you had for us after we spoke last week. That was very, very sweet. And also thank you to Daniel today for sharing his words about the journey in the UU community. Thank you also for a great start to the pledge drive.
We have at least 39 pledges from our 215 member households. We've also have some pledges from non-members, as well as one-time gifts to make up for the income deficit we are currently facing from our tenant. We are so deeply grateful for all the gifts that you have given. Thank you for helping us keep our harbor strong.
Thank you so much for a wonderful start, but yes, we have a long, long way to go. If you have not done so, please pledge soon and add your little boat here, like a little origami boat, to the float that is already present outside on the beautiful bulletin board you might have seen over our pledge drive table. There's a beautiful bulletin board with little boats accumulating.
And also don't forget, if you pledge before midnight of March 16th, you will be entered into a lottery draw for a stay at the Vanderlands Tahoe Cabin, March 16th. Get your pledge in by next week. Thank you, Marty and Linda, for this wonderful incentive.
And yes, we are asking those of you that are able to please raise your pledge this year by around 5 to 10%. But please also know that really anything you can give is valuable, and we're grateful for any dollar.
We are all part of this harbor, this community, First Unitarian Universalist Society of San Francisco. Some can give more, some can give less. That's okay. Your pledges are confidential, and please know that truly every dollar that you can contribute counts and is gratefully received.
So please stop by the table after service and say hi, and feel free also to share your stories about how you came to this church and what it really means to you for being here. Maybe also have a little chat with our little sailor, Elliot, who is proudly running around pulling his boat wagon and screaming ship ahoy for you. And you might even be invited to take a picture with him. Who knows, depending on what mood he's in.
I would also like to invite you to come back next Sunday when our 14-year-old will be giving her personal address to this community. I think you will find it interesting to hear what our youth is thinking and what they are doing. And I also think you may just learn something new. Please come next week for Oriana.
And then also, as Elliot would say, ship ahoy.